Jody Crumpy, director of the Erie City Mission Thrift Stores and Donation Center. When you shop at one of our two thrift stores or drop off items at our donation center, you are providing a meal. You are housing a man in our shelter, helping men and women overcome addiction, and giving our inner city youth an opportunity to learn. I want to thank you for making a difference. This is our city, our mission. God bless you.
All year round, Frontier Home Products and Design has what you need to make your home comfortable and beautiful. Relax on a new timber tech deck designed by Frontier's experts. A new fireplace from Frontier Home Products Fireplace Gallery adds warmth and serenity to any home. Beauty and versatility at Frontier Home Products and Design Center, 4213 Peachtree, 5th next to the Bayfront Highway.
Frontier Home Products and Design Center. Discover a new frontier.
PA contractor number PA039007.
Welcome to TalkErie.com's Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast. Every day, we tackle the biggest issues that the Erie PA region faces. Stay informed and involved as we advance the narrative of Erie. Now, here's Joel Natale.
I want to welcome in to our neck of the woods here, Erin Marenick. She's the Erie County Director of Public Health. Hey, Erin, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
You got it. And we have Brianna Adams. She is the Director of Environmental Health Services for the County Health Department. Great to see you again, Brianna.
Good to see you, too. Thank you.
All righty. So how healthy are we? How are we doing? How's Erie County's, what's our temperature?
Well, still chilly right now.
Right there. Yeah, there you go.
I think we've learned a lot in the last several years as a result of the pandemic and lessons learned moving forward, how to handle things.
Yeah, would you say, like, I mean, we're kind of coming out. It's weird because we're kind of coming out of respiratory illness season. Mm-hmm. And we had that triple threat. We've had that for the last couple of years of COVID-19, RSV, and the flu, mm-hmm. influenza. But with all this crazy weather, we're like going straight into seasonal allergies. Hello. Yeah. I mean, give my nose a rest, right?
I don't think you're going to get one this year.
Right. Yeah. So how was like that respiratory illnesses? What were you guys tracking? What was anything unusual or elevated?
So last year we had kind of an anomaly with flu and RSV. They hit very early and the numbers were very high. So we were closely watching things this year as well. We do have a new dashboard on our website that we're using to monitor it, which shows flu, COVID, and RSV data. We had a pretty typical flu and RSV season this year.
Okay.
None of the numbers were out of the norm or it hit at our typical pattern of illness.
When is it usually like right after the holidays,
mm-hmm.
that it peaks?
Yes.
Because I remember, again, pre-COVID, it was like January, February when we really got kind of overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. That particular year was a bad year for flu, if
yes,
I remember.
You were correct.
Yeah. And now we have this RSV thing. And my big question is, when did it kind of make the jump from being something that babies or really immune compromised people would get to, boy, you know, my very healthy daughters-in-law got it, you mm-hmm. know? What happened? Did something happen with the virus strain itself?
You know, I'm not actually sure if something changed with the virus strain as much with RSV. I think we're much more attuned to what's going on with respiratory disease because of COVID. And I think a lot more people get tested for things when in the past they maybe wrote it off as it was just a serious cold. But I think we're much more aware, especially of individuals over 65, that they're much more susceptible to those types of illnesses and also having more serious disease when they do get infected.
Well, that makes a lot more sense that, again, now we have this wide capability of testing. And do you get a sense that people are finally back to their regular routines as far as seeing their primary care, having their screenings? Those are a lot of things that we talk about, mm-hmm. public health of, you know, access and, mm-hmm. and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, I think people are in general pretty good now about, I would say, much more aware of if they have some sort of symptoms, being mindful of who they're around. And that is one benefit I think that came out of COVID, is mm-hmm. that people may be more willing to stay home or maybe willing to mask. I know we don't see it as much anymore, and it's a touchy subject for a lot of people, but it is really an effective way if you're symptomatic to protect the people around you and still participate in things going on.
Do you guys, I mean, from a public health perspective, Is there any negative to masking?
Not that we've seen research on.
Okay. Because I might be totally washed up on this, and I'd love for you to respond. But sometimes when I see masking outside, I'm afraid for that person's mental health, like that this is some kind of a crutch that they're holding on to. Is that irresponsible for me to think that way?
I mean, I think everyone has their opinion about masking. I think some people are more cautious than others and maybe felt more comfortable even wearing one outside. I would say that's definitely not the norm. Even during COVID, we weren't seeing that as much.
Right.
But if you are in large groups of people, like at an outdoor concert, and you're very close together, it is possible for some of these respiratory diseases to spread when you're that in close quarters.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, all the things we learned during COVID still are real. The 6 feet. I mean, if you're spewing droplets, I'm sorry to be so graphic, but I mean, that's still a thing. Whether it has flu or RSV or just a common cold or what have you.
Correct.
Right? I mean, it's crazy. All right. So given that we're kind of normal land, how has your job kind of pivoted? Like, what are you getting called on to do these days? I mean, we'll talk about Hep A in a second here, but like, what is the routine these days?
So I guess we're kind of back to normal public health activities. If that's ever a normal thing in public health. We're working on our community health needs assessment right now, which is really looking at a lot of data from a lot of different sources to look at the overall health of the community. And then we'll use that report to drive our community health improvement plan. So that is a pretty typical public health activity that we're looking at data like that.
Yeah.
Looking at what sort of programming, maintaining our partnerships that we built and developed during COVID, which really came into play during Hep A. So we were really grateful to have those connections with our healthcare systems.
Wow. Yeah. You really were able to pull in all those hospitals and things. You mentioned partnerships, and I'm wondering if you're still able to utilize, let's say, like the community centers and the neighborhood, you know, ground level situations to push out public health messages and also, you know, screenings and things like that.
Yeah, we still actually currently have contracts with two of our community centers that are doing some long COVID screening. They're doing some linkage to primary care physicians to make sure people have access to healthcare, because we know in some of those communities, people having access to trusted healthcare is really hard to find. So they've been a great partner in figuring that out.
What are you still tracking with COVID? I mean, you mentioned long COVID. I mean, is there a data stream still to Pennsylvania Department of Health and so on, and to CDC? Or,
I mean, COVID, we're still tracking wastewater data, which is still really important as a predictive tool. And what we also get from that is variant information. So right now, we're still looking at it's one variant that's pretty much primary across the country.
Which
right
one
now.
Is this?
I think it's JN.1.
JN, it's named after me.
There you go. Perfect.
I really liked it when it was BB-8. It wasn't really BB-8, but
it
should have been. It reminded me of Star Wars, you know. I'm sorry.
But so we're looking at that to see if there's a new variant coming in that might have. I think the fear is always if another variant develops that has the severe respiratory disease like we saw with Delta, then we're looking at a different type of response that we may see increased hospitalizations and we may see increased deaths again. And those things have been much lower over the last year.
Are you communicating any of the CDC data regarding vaccines? Because it was interesting. There was a recent New York Times article that was talking about, they were basically discouraging anyone under 65 from getting a vaccine because the success rate was like under 50% for plus 65 people. What's the word that you're getting?
I mean, we're still getting that vaccination's an important preventative tool for most people.
Okay.
It has shifted from getting it and then the number of boosters that it's looking like it's going to be more of an annual vaccination based on the type of variants and symptomology that we're seeing.
Wow. Okay. So will they have to like craft it 6 months ahead like they do with the flu?
Yes. I think that's what they'll have to do.
Oh my gosh. All right.
Because it's not gone away and it still is not settled into kind of a typical pattern like we see with the flu. So definitely people are still watching the numbers and the variants.
One of the things that we've been talking about with public health, again, pre-COVID and since, is these social determinants of health. And I didn't know if you're able to kind of swing back into the swing of things about those types of things as well.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a focus for our community health needs assessment, is okay. making sure we look at how data is impacted by those social determinants of health, and then identify gaps where we can maybe fill in or seek partnerships or look for funding streams that can help our community.
So you're kind of making that equation of like, okay, so where people have housing insecurity, we're seeing these kinds of health mm-hmm. outcomes?
Yes.
I mean, we're able to make that kind mm-hmm. of, wow.
Yeah, because it also has to do with food access or what's air quality like,
transportation,
child care. All of those things are really mm-hmm. important and can impact people's physical health and well-being.
You've got to be encouraged that the public health establishment is being surrounded by kind of the nonprofit establishment, and the media are interested in these things in a post-pandemic world, mm-hmm. whereas we probably didn't even know about it or think about it.
I think what I've always heard is that public health kind of flies under the radar until it's needed and there's a crisis, and then it's everyone's paying attention to what we do at the health department. But typically when we're doing our jobs well, especially related to like disease investigations and things, people don't know how much work we do in the background.
That's definitely sure.
The pandemic did create much more awareness of what the health department's role can be in a community.
Do you get a sense that that when you speak up or you do a release, you're being heard?
I do.
Yeah. That's helpful.
That's a good thing.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, when we ramped up real quick and then it was a slow fade. Mm-hmm. And now we are at a situation where we're kind of noting this 4-year deal. Where were you sitting on March 13th of 2020?
So I actually was not at the health department yet.
But what were you in public health?
Or? I was not. I worked in community behavioral health. So
okay, you were in mm-hmm. UK.
So we were kind
You're
of
behavioral what,
just
oh
waiting
gosh.
To see what was going to happen. And like everybody else, looking at the news and just seeing what was going on and wondering how we were going to care for our clients in setting.
Do you remember any discussions early on about, hey, they're not letting the kids back to school, like any of that stuff? Being a behavioral health specialist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there was just a lot of concerns about how we were going to live in a world where we couldn't be around each other for a while, when that hasn't happened in such a long time that we were asked to do something like that.
Right. It's the kiddos that were now feeling the pain, right? I mean, it's amazing the long, that's one of those long tails. Mm-hmm. That I think the mental health of our kids is a long COVID indicator. I want one more thing about COVID. We'll take a break and we'll kind of jump to that Hep A situation that you guys were dealing with. As far as testing, if people want, you know, either they want antigen tests, you know, or whatever, what's still free? What do you have to pay for that you know of?
So right now we still have our rapid testing available at LECOM. There's still a drive-through center that's
at
open 3
Schaefer
days.
Avenue?
Correct.
Okay.
That is still open. And we've done some community events where we're distributing the at-home tests. So if people need to have a test, and actually during our Hep A vaccination clinics, we were giving away free COVID tests for people that had been in there in case they needed them.
But generally, if you have insurance, do you know if insurance is still covering
I think they will cover. I'm not sure which pharmacies are actually still offering a PCR test for that.
I got a boatload last year, but, you know, they kind of expired mm-hmm. after a while.
And you should check the expiration dates, because actually most of them got extensions on their dates. Most of them like a year. So yours might still be good.
Yeah. Everyone's, you know, I kind of want to know if I have symptoms, mm-hmm. what is up. I do want to talk about really the amazing work that y'all did with the hepatitis A situation. So it was, well, give us the whole story so that we can understand what happened and then your response.
So I will start and then Brianna, please jump in.
Sure.
We definitely, so we do disease surveillance on 74 communicable diseases as part of our role as the public health department.
What's the data flow on that? How do you get that information?
So the Pennsylvania Department of Health maintains a statewide database for all reportable communicable disease.
Okay.
And then our trained disease investigators and supervisors monitor that every day. And then we do disease investigations on any new diseases that come in. So we're contacting people in the community. We might be contacting doctor's offices. And then something like a hepatitis A would just be a normal investigation.
Was that a ping that came up at the state level and said, hey, we had...
It comes through the list. We get a list of new
cases.
We had a
list in Erie County. Wow.
Correct. And then as we investigated, it became clear that this individual had access to handling food at
okay.
a restaurant,
yes.
which then kind of changes our response and it becomes much more serious because hepatitis A is spread basically from stool or blood in an infected individual. And if someone doesn't have good hand hygiene or has a small cut and that gets onto food, hepatitis A is a very resilient virus and it can live on surfaces for a very long time. And it doesn't die with freezing temperatures and it has to be over 185 degrees for over a minute to kill it even with heat.
What about bleach? Is it a bleach? No?
A lot of things don't touch Hep A. So
that's shocking.
So we kind of mobilized at that point.
Yes.
We pulled in our internal team and we worked very closely with the restaurant and with the State Department of Health to go through the process of the investigation. Identifying if there were any close contacts. There was a lot of work done. The restaurant was incredibly cooperative. They had a really good protocol in place for cleaning, which they did immediately. They did a lot of stuff on their own mm-hmm. without even us having to like talk to them or have expectations for what they should do.
Wow.
So we had found out on a Thursday afternoon, one of the supervisors of community health services came to my office. Hey, this is happening with a food worker. That evening we were at the facility. They already knew, their corporate office had already sent down like the cleaning protocols and everything. We were able to talk to the general manager about, you know, what had happened. What does this person, you know, what is their role here? Has anyone else called off sick? Anything like that? By Friday, we're talking with the state. Everything, ordering vaccine because there's a very short vaccine window where it's the most effective if you had been exposed to Hep A.
Okay.
And so it's the most effective within 2 weeks of exposure.
Gotcha.
And so trying to, you know, get those dates clarified as far as work schedules and other exposures. And then in a whirlwind week, by the following Thursday, we had hosted two large-scale vaccination events and been able to offer those free vaccines to over 400 people.
That's what was amazing to me. Were you surprised at the response to the call? Because it was very specific. You had to have been at the restaurant, what, like February 10th through or something, 2nd mm-hmm. to the 10th or whatever, right? It was very, very narrow
yes.
window. Because that's when it would be effective, right?
Right. So people, because of the way that hepatitis A is contagious, like there was maybe additional exposures outside of that window, but
okay.
the vaccine was the most effective for the people mm-hmm. exposed during that window.
And so that first day, you blew through your vaccine, were able to get on a very quick turnaround some more vaccine for that Thursday. So... Did on Tuesday, did on Thursday, mm-hmm. and you said 400 plus shots?
Correct, yeah.
Wow.
So on Tuesday, we went through 250 in about 4 hours, and then we had ordered a lot additional for Thursday, and I think we did another like 150, 160 that day.
But the crazy part is that we found out in the morning that our shipment wasn't coming in on Thursday,
right.
500. And this is where our partnerships really
yeah.
played a huge role. So we were able to talk to our partners at the healthcare systems. We were calling pharmacies. Our team was on the phone all morning and we were able to either go get, because we had staff that were on their way back from a conference at State College that stopped at the State Health Center to pick up some doses and bring them. We
wow.
had a health department in New York State. We sent someone up there to get them and we ended up having more than our shipment would have been
wow.
that we were able, which was amazing because we really... If we would have had to cancel that day, people would have been outside the window. We wouldn't have been able to vaccinate anyone. So we had a tremendous response from our partnership and are just so grateful for their assistance.
And on that point too, a lot of the places that we were calling, they had like 10 vaccines, 20 vaccines.
Yeah.
Like no one had, you know, 200 vaccines, right, or yeah, anything. So it was really, it really pulled together really quickly. And then I think that the media really helped with everything too. Like the population at that restaurant are people that pay a lot of attention to the news. Mostly.
Sure. Yeah.
And so being able to get the word out, you know, this is what happened, this is when our clinics are, when we ran out of vaccine, mm-hmm, on Tuesday. So I think that those partnerships as well were incredibly helpful.
Because of its location up by the highway, though, it occurred to me that there were probably a lot of travelers. Mm-hmm. How do you get a hold of a traveler?
So actually with our state health department,
yeah,
they reached out to other health departments that were kind of along the 90 corridor.
Seriously.
To let them know that. And then they have a system that they use to alert epidemiologists across the country so that they got information out that way so people could really be prepared if they need to have vaccine. And we had heard that some of our partners in Ohio and New York did see an uptick in people getting the hepatitis A vaccine.
Okay.
So all of those were good things.
That's amazing when you think about that kind of the system works.
Mm-hmm. And I think just goes to your point of like that public health work for so long has been invisible, right? You don't know that those things are happening, but like, yeah, we get those alerts every day. Like we have, I'm on a call with a few of our team monthly for Great Lakes Border Health. So all the states that border the Great Lakes as well and Canada, you know, to talk about mosquitoes or what illnesses they're seeing. And it all happens in the background.
Wow.
Until we need it.
Like we've known for years, you know, it generally it's one of those first items to cut on a state budget or, you know, or to not think about. Meanwhile, when something happens, we need you to be absolutely on the job. And you guys were for that Hep A deal. Man, that's really remarkable. Ladies, let's just talk about, some of the other things that are in the environmental services space. Brianna, let's talk about like, you know, keeping our restaurants clean, keeping the other places where you have to provide licenses. Talk about that whole gamut there, if you would.
Sure. So our team of about 18 staff is able to inspect and license, you know, like 1,700 restaurants, schools,
wow,
pools, campgrounds, manufactured home parks. We work with private homeowners on their septic systems and wastewater handling. And then as the summer rolls out, you'll also hear from us about mosquitoes and ticks and beach water sampling too.
I'm amazed that, I mean, with all the releases that, Walter will put out,
mm-hmm,
we find the mosquitoes, but we've not had a human case in years. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, we haven't had a positive
West Nile
virus case in a human for several years, and I'm hoping that you don't jinx
yeah,
it.
Yeah, please. Exactly.
But we have been lucky in that regard, and that's part of the reason that we do that surveillance. So like we had talked about the hepatitis A case and doing the surveillance, seeing what pops up in the system, it's similar in a way to what we're doing with mosquitoes. So mm-hmm, we set traps throughout the county. We pull those, check all the mosquitoes. We send them to the state lab and they'll test them and let us know if there was that virus present in the mosquitoes.
Do you do anything? And I, again, this is just my ignorance, but like, do you ever pull samples of fish that have been pulled out of the lake to see what, like a mercury level or microplastics level or something like that?
We don't do that at Erie County Department of Health, but the state partners with DEP would.
Do they? Okay.
Their biologists would, or sometimes the Regional Science Consortium will have research projects that universities or anything are working on.
So, yeah, that's something that somebody's consuming, I guess. And then, of course, your agencies are connected when there's a national recall in like food or
mm-hmm,
listeria mm-hmm, outbreaks and all that stuff, right? What do you guys have to do with that generally? Do you have to get the word out, or do you ever have to do people dump food at your door? I don't know.
Not typically. And a lot of the times those would happen from more of like the federal or the state level.
Yeah.
What we can do, and something that we did recently with there's some applesauce that's been contaminated with lead. And so we've helped to spread the word about that, because it's a product that we're starting several places across the country. We're seeing increased blood lead levels in children who are eating like these applesauce pouches. And so we helped mobilize our team to go to the stores, because we already have their information. We already have the relationships with them, and just make sure that those weren't on the shelves. If they were on the shelves, is there a measure to prevent the sale of them at the register?
So you're checking lot numbers on the shelves for the most part.
Sometimes. A lot of the times, like corporate stores and everything will have that information through their Shoppers Club card, or be able to pull that more readily than someone just going and physically checking.
That's interesting. But yeah, I mean, the electronics work it out. Wow. Yeah. When you know, we're going to be coming into the summer months, we've got the eclipse coming, a lot of events that keeps you guys busy over at Environmental Health, right? I mean,
it sure does. So we license and inspect all of the temporary food events throughout the county, as well as temporary campgrounds and temporary body art stations. So if anyone's hosting, you know, chicken wing cook-offs or fairs and festivals, we are there before they open and conducting those inspections.
What are you looking for? You're looking for like triple sinks and, you know, temperatures in refrigerators and all that stuff?
I mean, yeah, so we're doing a risk-based inspection. And so we are starting with even like, where's their water from? Where are they dumping their wastewater? Yeah. But then where's the food from? And is it an approved source and not coming from, you know, my grandma's kitchen down the block? Checking their hand hygiene, because we know that that's a really great way to spread disease. Their sanitation, that they are cleaning everything in between. And temperature control and everything else.
So yeah, your really wonderful homemade gnocchi recipe, it's got to be created under these established serve safe situations, right?
Correct.
I mean, good Lord. I mean, gosh. Where is the county having you guys at for the eclipse? Do you have to be in uniform?
So we actually, because of where our health department is located, yes, we anticipate a ton of traffic on the bluffs overlooking the lake.
Because you're right there at Bayview Park, right?
So we are actually going to be working remotely that day, because we are worried about even our staff getting in and out of the parking lot. So we will have some inspectors out in the field that are working on any of the food events that might be happening, because a lot of people are having parties and events for the eclipse. So we will have a team that's working. But with as much traffic and everything that's expected downtown and on the bayfront, we felt like it was a better use of our staff's time to have them offsite that day.
More than likely. All right. Let's talk about, again, things that we can do to be better citizens, healthier citizens, help out the public health establishment here. A lot of the same things that we learned at COVID still apply, right? You know, you fight off disease better if you're exercising and eating right and sleeping well, right? I mean, that's
correct.
All the same, right?
I mean, correct. I think it became more apparent that there were a lot of comorbidities that became clear during COVID, that if people were severely overweight or had other chronic medical conditions like diabetes, they a lot of times had much more serious disease or were hospitalized because their body just couldn't fight off the infection as well as someone that was healthier.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And, you know, as you kind of look forward, the next 12 to 24 months, you're creating this plan, right? You're doing this needs assessment. What's the timing on that? And then will that kind of launch you into maybe some new initiatives from County Public Health?
Yeah. So after we do our community health needs assessment, which does have a community feedback component, so we'll be conducting some focus groups with specific areas or stakeholders. We'll also have a steering committee that will include community partners. And then there'll also be a public survey that we're going to encourage as many people as possible to fill out so that we have data from all different parts of the community. I know there's a lot less care, there's a lot less food, there's a lot less resources in some of our rural communities as well as our very urban communities.
Yeah.
So getting feedback for us in those areas is really important as we develop this plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you sensing that as you know, as the workforce kind of shrinks in Erie County and the population shrinks, does that make your job harder as far as for access to primary care and so on like that?
Well, I think our population is aging in Erie, yeah, to some degree, which comes with another set of health problems or comorbidities. And mm-hmm. we've got every year now three pretty serious respiratory diseases that hits every year. So I think the more we can help make people aware of the importance of preventative health care and doing what they can to become healthier on their own with just exercise and getting enough sleep, little changes can make a huge difference in your health.
There's no doubt about it. Well, we're excited that you came by. I think there's a lot here as far as just keeping folks healthy, you know, and, you know, you're kind of leading the way. You're kind of educating us. You're providing the services at ground level, and we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
You got it.
You've been listening to The Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast from TalkErie.com. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher and get involved by emailing joel@TalkErie.com.